This is the 17th season of Bass Talk Live with your hosts, Mark Jeffries and Matt Pingrack. BTL is brought to you by Lowrance, Basscat Boats, APCO, Duck and Fishing, Strike King Lures, Sunline, Big Bite Baits, Spro, XO Lures, Yamagatsu, The Bass Tank, and Denali Rods. BTL coming at you.
Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome once again to another edition of BTL Bass Talk Live, where Matt and I are going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Matthew, how you doing?
Good. I'm excited to talk to a couple guys today who have a day off.
Yeah, because they were successful in winning the qualifying rounds. We're going to have Brent Chapman and Zach Burge on this morning. We're going to have Brent on, and then we'll take a break and then come back and talk to Zach, and it's going to be cool stuff. We're going to get their take. Both guys had huge day ones. I don't know if you looked at the standings and the stats and everything. Yeah. I mean, Zach had
a big day too, though, because he had to come back and beat Wheeler because he had a massive.
But Wheeler only had 5 pounds on the second day.
Yeah, I wonder, you would think, you know, there's a lot of strategy involved, but I would imagine that Wheeler struggled because he probably would have liked to have wrapped that up. Now, I remember when they first did this rule change. Remember, Mark, and the rule change was to facilitate some drama at the top of the leaderboard because you had the first year a bunch of guys that coasted into the knockout round. And they said, well, now we'll change it to where if you win your qualifying round, you can skip the knockout round. You go straight to the championship round. So what that does is that guarantees you a top 10 finish in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
With the weights are zeroed. If, you know, you finish second in that round, you can still finish 40th, which is middle of the pack. So a lot of points implications, plus the automatic berth into the finals. And at the time, I was like, dude, I don't like that because it gives them an off day. Everyone else has consecutive days and it's hard to keep the momentum rolling, right?
Yeah.
In hindsight, I think it's been a great move for them. I was wrong on that.
Yeah.
It's actually worked out great. And you've seen a lot of guys who have actually won that round actually go on to win the tournament and they enjoy that off day. And I don't think it's hurt them at all being on that off day. And you've seen some drama at the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah. Burge actually says in an interview that this is something that he feels helps him.
Yes.
We'll get into that.
That's what I said. I was wrong on that because I was pretty adamant about, like, how are you punishing these guys by not giving them another day on the water, even though they qualified?
Yeah.
But it works out.
Yeah, so good show today. Tomorrow we're going to have Bradley Hallman on with Matt, and those two guys and myself will discuss really the swing that has already taken place and then what they expect on the James River. So we'll see about that.
Did you see any of the posts from Neely Henry where the guys are now in their second day of practice for the Elite Series, which, shockingly, after this, there's only 3 Elite Series left, Mark. So, I mean, a lot of sitting under docks.
Yes.
A lot of lightning emojis. And here's the crazy thing. That lake fluctuates a lot. You know, I fished it in the open last year. It's a river fishery. It's got current on it. It can get muddy. There's a lot of backwaters in it. And it's going to rain a lot today and tomorrow and then be partly sunny.
Yeah.
And I say that's very important because if you take a look, and we haven't really talked about this a lot, I feel like it's kind of slipped past us. If you take a look at the Angler of the Year leaderboard right now, which it's time to start looking at that, Mark.
Well, we actually talked a little bit about it when you were gone.
Okay.
Me and Ken Duke.
Oh, okay.
But you're dead on.
But
that.
Here's the thing. So you've got Seth Fider and Patrick Walters that have a 50-point lead over everybody else. Drew Cook, Lee Livesey, Chris Johnson, Kyle Welcher, Polinick. They're all kind of grouped up there.
Yeah.
Seth Fider, I remember we always said, man, if this guy could figure out how to catch him down south, it would be game over by the time they went up north. This is the tournament that Seth Fider has to get through. Neely Henry.
Yeah.
We're talking a spotted bass and largemouth current-driven fishery in Alabama. If he can get through this, I think it is a runaway victory for Seth Fighter in the Angler of the Year. But I think Patrick Walters obviously could keep pace with him. We've seen what he's done. But look at this. If he can get through this, he has Gunnersville, Champlain, and St. Lawrence. You know he's going to top 10 Champlain and St. Lawrence. The St. Lawrence
should
most likely will be the favorite. The last two times they've been to Gunnersville, Seth Fighter has used his Minnetonka expertise. Back-to-back 11th place finishes in 2019 and 2020. So this right here, I believe this week on Neely Henry that kicks off on Thursday, this is Seth Fighter's Angler of the Year tournament right here.
Could be. I made the comment. Look, folks, it's not about the hair. It's not about the mustache. This dude is a stick and has been and continually improves what he needs to improve on. And he freaking got it done in the South this year.
Just a dirty, old-fashioned, grimy tournament guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just...
He's
dirt
good,
under
man.
The fingernails.
He's really, really, really good. So that's a great point. Great point. All right, I want to get into something real quick, and then we'll take a break. I think at quarter till the hour, we're going to take a break and then come back with Brent. But I noticed something that was really cool, and I don't know if you saw this. I'm actually going to play a video. And it got me thinking about when the time comes that Rick Lund fishes his final tournament. All right. The question I have for you is, do you think that Rick will make an announcement and say, this is my final season? Or do you think just all of a sudden he's going to go, you know what? I'm done. What do you think he's going to do?
I don't think he'll do an announcement.
See, I think he will, because he's such a person that respects the game, but still, it's not about him. It's not about him.
I don't think he will, because I don't think he'll realize he's done until after the year's over. With everything that he said about how he doesn't believe in retirement.
I hope he doesn't do that.
As just a number, I think he'll just finish a year and be like, I'm done.
I hope he doesn't do that.
Yeah, I don't think he'll look that far ahead, to be honest with you, because I don't think he has any plans of it.
Yeah. There was something that took place in hockey that was very, very, very cool.
I saw you had that in the queue.
Yeah, I'm going to throw up this video now. There's no audio with it. So let me.
That'll really help our iTunes viewers.
Yeah, we're just going to have to kind of talk through
it. Here we have some anglers on the ice.
All right, do you recognize those sweaters? A lot of people call them sweaters.
Yeah, they're the duck sweaters.
Yeah, the cool version. I like the orange version.
Ryan Miller's still playing hockey?
Who is the goaltender in that shot right there?
Ryan Miller.
That was his final game, and they're playing the LA Kings.
When is this?
And a couple days ago.
Oh, so I didn't even know he was still playing.
Yeah. But look what happens after the game. The Ducks ended up winning the game 6-2. They beat the Kings 6-2, but look what the Kings are doing.
Yeah, they all stayed on the ice to congratulate Ryan Miller. Well, he's been a goalie forever.
19 years, man.
Yeah, that's impressive.
And so many people think that hockey is just violence and fighting and, you know, very, very physical. The respect that your opponent and the league is showing Ryan Miller right now is so impressive. And I was trying to recall, I know some of the stuff in basketball, there's been, some final tours, or final season. I remember somebody gave Michael Jordan a rocking chair. I think they gave Kareem Abdul-Jabbar a rocking chair. But I don't remember in hockey something like this taking place where the opposing team actually waited
to
give the respect. Did they do that with Gretzky?
Oh, hell yeah. I remember it. I was sitting in my grandma's living room. Yeah. 1999, I believe, was the year when he was with the Rangers.
Can you remember a goalie that they've done that?
No, but they do that all the time. Like, when Marc-Andre Fleury went back to Pittsburgh, they gave him a standing ovation in both teams. And
I just thought that was really, really cool. I don't remember the Gretzky thing, but the fans, the game, this is what got me thinking. The fans and the game for certain anglers in this industry, I don't want to say that these anglers owe the fans that announcement of saying, hey, this is going to be my last season. But at the same time, I have that feeling that they need to be appreciated in a manner of respect. And I think there's more.
Who has done that in fishing so far? Did Kevin Wirth do it at the Classic?
Did he make the announcement at the Classic? He might have.
Didn't Kevin Short do an announcement?
He did get really emotional.
Did Kevin Short do a deal too?
I don't remember. It doesn't stick in my mind. Maybe somebody out there, some of the fans can let us know on that. He's still fishing though.
Yeah. Well, so's Kevin Short.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of did Denny Brower do one?
I don't know. Fans out there, help us out, because
who had a farewell tour?
I don't know. I don't think it's ever been done. But the amount of respect that the fans and the anglers would give. I mean, think about Rick's win, his last win, how guys hung around even an extra day just to witness.
Well, his win before that, they thought it would be his last win,
I know,
too.
I know. So I it just got me thinking. I don't want it to be hokey or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just from a respect standpoint, because I think so many things have just been dispersed because of the modern era, that sometimes I think respect gets lost. And I think what the fans and what the anglers and what people in the industry would really want to do is give these individuals that deserve that respect, because what they have done in this industry, I think if the fans knew, not to commercialize, don't get the wrong idea. I am in no way, like, we don't want a company to sponsor a guy's final tour or final season or whatever it is. That's not what
final season brought to you by BTO.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Every week we talk about how the end is nearer.
Yeah. The biggest thing that I got from that video was the respect that was shown to Ryan Miller because of everything that he's done being in the league 19 years.
I was trying to think about it, and Brent might be a good guy to ask because he's been around for a long time. Can he remember any anglers that have kind of done a farewell tour where you knew it was their last, their kind of last?
Charlie Hartley is saying Ken Cook. They did that for Ken Cook.
Yeah, Charlie would know.
Yeah, they said they got him a cool gun. Because, you know, he's a big hunter and stuff. So, I don't know. It really, really got me thinking when I saw that. It kind of brought a tear to my eye, man. Mm-hmm. Ryan Miller's been around forever.
Yeah, he's been around since I was a little kid. I mean, he has. I remember him. And, before it gets past the, you probably didn't browse through the top 10 photos for the Open on Pickwick on Bates. A lot of the standard stuff that you'd see, bladed jigs, crankbaits, swim baits, but two of the top 10 anglers, including your winner, Joey Nenea, the ball and chain. I knew. I mean, we've got back-to-back derbies now with Lee Livesey on the Zara Spook, and now an Open, big part ball and chain. There's a Spook and a Carolina rig in back-to-back
events.
When's
the last time you've thrown it? Seriously, when is the last time you've thrown it?
I don't throw it. It breaks my rods. The thing clanks up against your rods. It comes loose in the tackle box.
That's the
every
lamest
time,
excuse I've
every
ever
time
heard.
You have to retie it, it takes 10 minutes.
Oh.
I don't
I don't
know if I even have the components for a Carolina rig.
Are you kidding
in
me?
In my boat. No, I'm serious. Half the time they swallow it. Everyone who drives past asks if the blue cats are biting.
Over here
I think the last time I did it was when I was drifting on Lake Thunderbird for blue cats.
Oh, my gosh.
And you get to Carolina, you put one with the shad tail to the right and one with the shad tail to the left, and then it slowly spins behind the boat.
Can't wait to tell Frank this story. That is something you need to work on, but dude. You need to watch part one and part two.
I feel like there are so many other options that work almost like as effectively, like a power drop shot, a swing head.
You need to watch part
I mean, there's
one and
so
two,
many
dude.
Things that I feel more comfortable with than the ball and chain.
Yeah.
Can you ever remember Brent Chapman throwing the ball and chain?
I'm sure he has. We'll ask him because we're going to go to him here after our break. I'm sure he has. Are you kidding me? You want to bet on that one? You want to go lunch on whether or not Brent Chapman throws a Carolina ring?
I would go lunch with you that in the past 3 years, Brent Chapman has not cashed a check, primarily.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to catch a ball, but primarily on a Carolina rig.
All right, Brent, don't answer that question. We could see him in the queue.
I'm going to go 5 years. It's been at least 5 years since Brent Chapman, his cashed a check. That's a solid finish.
What do you mean primarily? Like, I mean, these guys change it up. Okay. They may throw a Carolina rig
I'm just saying, no, it doesn't count if he's like, well, I caught one at Lake Champlain on the Carolina rig. I'm saying where he went out
five years.
It was his
I'll go lunch on that. I can
I like the spicy chicken, by the way.
I can do that. Well, I can't taste anything, so it doesn't matter. I mean,
not because you have COVID.
Yeah, it's not COVID.
It's a traumatic brain injury.
Yes, yes, yes. All right.
And so that may never come back.
Yeah, if it doesn't come back within
a year.
And none
of the other side effects that they were worried about have cropped up?
No.
Well, that's good.
That's it. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, man. Doing pretty good. Might even go bowling today. We'll see.
I think I'm going to win this bet.
Okay, we'll see. I'm good for lunch on that.
Okay.
I got no problem. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with Brent Chapman here on a Tuesday. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The ultimate fishing system starts with Lowrance HDS Live. The best fish finding tools, from Chirp Sonar and Fish Reveal to active imaging and new active target live sonar. And complete touchscreen control, from your trolling motor to your big motor. For a limited time, building the ultimate fishing system will be easier on your wallet. Upgrade to HDS Live with a Ghost trolling motor, active target sonar, or live sight sonar, and save up to $800.
Fastcat's legendary 20-foot platform has been paired with angler-approved accessories for 2021. Puma FTD features the proven hull used by many of the top names in bass fishing today, backed by a transferable lifetime warranty. The Puma FTD boasts a full team deck concept which enhances efficiency for you and your tournament partners. Turnkey tournament-winning performance. The Puma FTD SP from Fastcat.
Let's face it, fishing electronics are no longer an afterthought. They've become a necessity. And at the Bass Take, our experts match you with the right electronics, provide professional installation, and educate you to help maximize your catching results while providing support along the way. Because let's be honest, it's about catching, not just fishing. And when you're ready for better results, join the Bass Take team. Visit us today on Facebook or go to thebasstake.com.
You've been waiting all week for this. And Sunline wants to make sure you're ready for it with bulk spools of all your favorite fishing lines.
That's so fun.
Bulk up with Sunline. Big companies get bigger and bigger and talk about their fancy labs where they study fish behavior. But then they all go golfing on the weekend. We don't have a large laboratory to test baits. Why, you ask? We don't need a big laboratory because our pros fish. Our employees fish. Our salespeople fish, our suppliers fish, our mold builders fish, our owners fish, and our kids fish. This is our laboratory. Our R&D comes from time on the water, learning how to make fish bite. All that time on the water brings us thousands of hours of testing new products and improving current ones for all species.
All of us on the Pro Tournament Trail use Gamigatsu hooks.
Why?
Because they are absolutely the best.
It's not about how many bites you get.
It's how many you put in the boat.
Gamigatsu makes hooks for every fishing style.
We didn't come this far to lose fish.
Did you?
For more information, visit Gamigatsu.com.
All right, we are back on a Tuesday, and it is time to go to our first special guest. And before we go there real quick, did you see what Mr. Hawk did this week?
Cash a check?
Yeah. How about that? So props to him for making it happen. Really
dude's
cool.
Ridiculously good.
Really, really cool video of him on MajorLeagueFishing.com.
This lake fishes like a West Coast lake.
Yeah, I'd say that.
100%.
Yeah, in some aspects, yes. All right. You're not going to believe this.
What, your mouse isn't working now?
Yeah, just...
How many batteries do you need? I got batteries over here. Is it just one double A?
I don't know. Let me look.
If it's one double A.
Oh, that was weird.
Here you go.
Hang on.
It's not working.
It's not working.
Completely. Because you know that Brent Chapman hasn't cashed a check on the Carolina rig in 5 years, so you...
Is that why...
You maliciously broke the mouse.
No, I didn't do that. All right, let's see here. Okay. I don't think this has happened in the 17-year history of the show.
It's preparation, Mark.
Oh, yeah. Like, there we go.
I saved the day.
Where did you pull that battery out of?
My mouse.
Oh, well, I've got like two cases over there of AA batteries. Anyway. That's pretty funny. Good job, man.
Thank you.
All right, let's bring him in. Brent, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Good to hear from you guys.
Yeah, thanks for taking time out. All right, man, first things first, you got to settle the bet. Within the last 5 years, have you cashed a check?
Primarily
using a Carolina rig.
I got to say, that is the funniest intro ever. And I'll tell you, after hearing that, it makes me feel young to think that I've put the Carolina rig away. I wrote it off many, many years ago. And Matt, there are much better ways to catch them than the old ball and chain. The last time we used some saltwater fishing to catch stuff off the bottom. But it's one of those things. I've tied it on a couple times this year in practice. And honestly, I haven't even pulled it out of the rod box to even make a cast with it.
Both of those rods will fold like a cheap suit the moment you try to set the hook on them, because that thing hits up against it.
I'll tell you, the last time I committed to throwing a Carolina rig and it came back to bite me was the Gunnersville event. I don't know what year it was that Skeet won, and I was catching them on a Carolina rig, catching good fish. And the first day of the tournament, I weigh in like 10 pounds on Gunnersville. I'm in like, I don't know, 97th place or something. And I'm like, I'm done, because I got my tail kicked on bladed jigs and swim baits and all that kind of stuff. And it is. I'll tie it on every once in a while just because I feel like it's something to do. But yeah, I couldn't tell you the last time I caught a fish on a Carolina rig.
So, wow.
Like I said, Mark, I like the spicy, crispy chicken with the waffle fries.
Wow.
And a lemonade. Not the diet lemonade. The diet lemonade from Chick-fil-A is not my favorite. So,
all right, you cost me $10 there, Brent. Anyway.
I just had to be honest there.
No, that's cool. Did you not throw back in the Central Pro-Am days at all?
I did, but usually it came back to bite me when I did.
No, that's how we got out of the Central Pro-Ams and onto the Bassmaster Tour. He put the Carolina rig down.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, there's a lot faster ways to catch them.
All right, moving on. Dude, you won the qualifying round, and you had a tremendous day one. What can you tell the fans about what's going on Travis?
You know, Travis is a really cool lake. It reminds me a lot of our Ozarks lakes. It reminds me a lot of Bull Shoals and Table Rock. And when we came here in, I think it was 2018, it really reminded me exactly of those Clearwater lakes in the Ozarks that I grew up fishing. And that event, it was early summer, the conditions. And then we come here, we're 3 weeks earlier. And it just reminds me exactly of, we're in that post-spawn funk where we have some fish still spawning, but then you have some that are, you know, just being lethargic. But the fish are extremely scattered. I haven't seen any schooling activity like we saw the previous time we're here. And what that tells me is it means do something that suits your style, that, you know, fits your strengths, and go fish with your strengths. And if you guys have followed on live, that's what I've been doing, just keeping a bait wet, covering a lot of water, and I'll go a long ways without getting a bite, and then you hit a little stretch and you catch two or three, and that's what I'm hoping to do again tomorrow.
All right. One more question, Matt, then I'll send it your way. It was interesting that you mentioned that, because in an interview that was posted on Major League Fishing, you talked about fishing your strengths. What I want to know is most of the time, obviously it helped you this week, but most of the time, is that something that you follow? Because Matt was very, very vocal about what he did in the open on Pickwick about finding something that fits his strengths, not trying to force feed, you know, a square peg in a round hole or whatever that is. How important is that from a success standpoint? And when do you know to pull away from your strengths?
You know, that's a great question. And you guys probably know, following my career, especially in the last, since 2012, you know, I've had some ups and downs in there. And I think when you get to this level, it becomes a real mental struggle. And when I get back to the keeping it simple, remind myself to keep it simple and do the things that suit my style, I typically do a lot better. I mean, we all know it. We come to a particular body of water and, hey, you're at this lake and you're supposed to throw a swim bait, or you're at this lake and you're supposed to throw a Carolina rig. No, I don't like doing that. This is what I like doing. So typically go look for the water that will suit your style. And that usually works out a lot better for myself. And I know it will for others as well. And especially in our format where we have 3 2.5 hour periods, it makes it really tough to go try something or do something different. So our practice is very valuable. And what I found in practice was, I'm going to stick with, you know, do the things that work for me, stick with my strengths. And, you know what? It's gotten me to where I'm at now, so it's all working well.
All right, great job, Matt.
One of the things that I was surprised with, and you guys were going to Travis, I covered it in 2018, was I thought, man, the finesse guys are really going to shine here. And it's really surprised me. I would put you in a power fishing category. You're a very versatile angler, but you're more of a power fisherman. And I'm looking at guys who were just in your group who are no longer fishing in this event. And you're seeing like John Murray and Jeff Creech, Shin Fukai, James Elam, Josh Bertrand, a lot of these finesse guys at Clearwater. And the guys that are still fishing, you're seeing like Stephen Browning, Tommy Biffle, Keith Poche, John Cox, both of the lanes, and you. Did you expect it to kind of fish the way that it has fished thus far, or is it a little bit of a surprise that the power guys are actually out fishing the finesse guys?
Well, it makes me realize I made the right decisions. But, you know, in practice, we try different things. You know, it's hard to try much in the 2 days of practice, but you do try a few things. And you know, even like the first morning at takeoff, or when you're running around in competition, you know, you might see a Jeff Crete way out off a point, or Mark Davis and something like that. And that's what's kind of cool about Score Tracker too, is it makes you feel good about what you're doing, or it makes you realize, hey, maybe it's time for a change. You know, if you got those, you know, finesse guys, offshore guys, if they're really whacking on them and you're not, it might be the realization of, hey, you need to probably make a change here. You know, that the Score Tracker has been my friend this week. And I'll tell you, I've been on that Toro cut line many, many times, and it takes many years off your life. So where I've been this week, it's been a lot more pleasant and enjoyable, and it plays into my favor, because I was like, hey, I'm up here at the top. What I'm doing is working. Let's just keep at it. And even when I would just completely go fish something new and catch a few more fish, it just helps my confidence tremendously.
My last question then to you is, I do remember the last time when the Elite Series was at Travis, it was kind of, I would say, a coming out party for the forward facing sonar technology. A lot of guys saying, oh my gosh, we're seeing these fish and we're catching them. Is that playing as big a role this time around, especially with more guys on that train?
You know, obviously I don't know what other guys are doing here. I did catch some fish in practice on a jerk bait, and I was able to watch a lot of that stuff and play with that. But if you guys have followed me on live here, I'm fishing so shallow that it's really not making a difference for me. But, you know, the big thing for me, especially with my Garmins, is every time I catch a fish, I save a waypoint. And what that does over time, especially after multiple days and you're fishing the same stretches, it will actually help you realize, hey, this is a sweet spot or a good stretch here. And, man, I've fished through this 200-yard stretch here 3 or 4 times, and I haven't had a bite. So it really lets you come down to, especially on like championship day, there's going to be some big stretches tomorrow that I'm going to know, hey, don't waste your time on this. You've already made 3 or 4 passes down here, haven't any bites. Go focus on the waypoints. And typically, if you can go hit enough of those, you know, you're going to put a lot more fish in the boat that much faster.
All right, Brent, one of the cool things that I like about this format and the qualifying perspective is the strategy that can take place on day two. Can you talk a little bit about what you did and what the plan was from a strategy standpoint on day two?
Yeah, you know, being where I was, you know, Mark Rose and I were kind of battling out, and that's the one thing I commend Major League Fishing. That first year they did it, they didn't make it where the winner – advance straight to the championship round. So guys would kind of lay off their fish. And, and I don't think that was great for the fans, but doing what they did by allowing the winner to advance, you kind of had to keep your foot on the pedal and keep fishing. And that's what it was. I mean, it was a battle for between Mark Rose and I to try to win to go straight to the championship round. And so I didn't really get a chance to take my foot off the pedal, but at the same time, you know, I had a pretty good cushion there. Then Mark took it, took the lead back. And I'm like, man, I have to do something here to get back in the lead. And the more the day was progressing, I'm like, the area that I caught most of my fish out of, it was getting a lot of fishing pressure. And I got to thinking, I'm like, if I'm going to have a shot at winning this event, I'm going to have to expand my water, and I might as well do it now. And that's when I just decided to call an audible and just go fishing. And that's when I found these new areas that have more fish. And it really gave me the confidence, especially going in tomorrow's championship round. If I'm not getting bit, don't hesitate to pull up the trolling motor and go fish something completely new.
All right. Very cool. Now, some of the live stuff and some of the video highlights that I've seen, some of the areas that not just yourself, but a lot of people are targeting just look like do nothing banks. And the realization is, as far as the juice, I don't know how much you can say about it now, but maybe you can talk about it afterwards. But people really need to watch and learn from what you guys are doing, that there's more to a bank than just what you see.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, in this event, I think the stage that we're in, the fish are extremely scattered. You know, last time we were here, they were schooled up. So what I'm doing by covering a lot of water, I'm just covering a lot of water and just catching those random fish. But even on those do-nothing banks, there's a lot of stuff under the water. You know, there might be isolated rocks, or there might be that little rock shell in water that you can, but believe it or not, a lot of them that I've caught or been in just that much water to where they're just up there. I don't think they're worried so much about the cover. They're up there chasing those bait fish.
Yeah.
My last question before we let you go is, what are your thoughts on Milford Lake there in the whole state of Kansas?
So I know you were there, Matt. You got to enjoy the snowstorm and all that. And I'll say this, you know, we could probably talk about why tournaments go to certain places, and sometimes there's a little money involved. But I had numerous people call me asking me about Milford Lake. And I said, guys, I've been fishing for 25 years. I've lived in the state of Kansas my whole life. And you know how many times I've fished Milford Lake? Zero. I've never fished it. So that just shows, yeah, I know it's become a better fishery, but I don't know if it's a good enough fishery for a big event like what they've had, probably for a club tournament or so. But yeah, I don't know much about it, and I'm not in any big hurry to go out and fish Milford Lake.
So, you know, Jared Miller made Colorado.
Yeah.
He said, hey, man, I called up Brett Chabot. I got bad news. I said, what's that? He goes, he's never fished it. We are so screwed.
Wow.
He goes, if it's in Kansas and it's any good, he's had to have fished it.
Wow. All right. Final question, Brent, and then we'll let you go. Besides the obvious and catching fish, what is the main point that you have to do to win this thing?
The biggest thing is to be keep an open mind. And like I said, like I mentioned earlier, is I'm going to have that confidence to, if my area, my gut tells me is the area I'm fishing is getting a lot of pressure. I know the second day I saw a lot more boats in there fishing. I have no idea how many of Group B were actually fishing in there, but my gut told me just the way the action was on day two for me was that area is getting a lot of pressure. But what I learned was by just going and running a pattern is I've got to not be scared tomorrow to just pick up that trolling motor and go fish something completely new and fresh. And a lot of times those are where you end up having your best tournaments. And who knows, maybe I'll do that tomorrow and that's what will bring home the big trophy.
All right, man. Great stuff. Can't thank you enough for taking time out to be on the show. Best of luck to you. I'll be watching, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And Matt, enjoy that lunch.
I will. Courtesy of the Carolina.
Thank you, Brent. All right, man. Take care, dude.
Take care. See ya.
All right. See ya. All right. There you have it, folks. Brent Chapman. Good stuff there, man.
You want to go double or nothing with Zach Birch?
No. No. I'm a smart man. I'll take my loss and move on down the road, man. Interesting. Never been to Milford. How about that?
It's not shocking.
I would have taken that bet. Has Brent Chapman ever been to Milford? I would have said, yeah.
I think it really is a good lake.
Well, it's been proven that it's a good
you
lake.
You sure you don't want to go double or nothing with Zach Burge on the Carolina rig? Except here. Okay.
No.
I think you might win this one.
We'll ask him, but I you're good, man. You get your, what is it, number 27 or whatever it is. Whatever number.
The Spicy Chicken Deluxe?
Yeah, what number is that?
I don't know.
From, what's your favorite Chinese place that you go to all the time?
Oh, I go to Panda a lot.
Yeah.
I get the Beijing beef, the honey walnut shrimp, and the orange chicken, half and half chow mein and fried rice.
Cost me 10 bucks,
crab
folks.
Rangoons.
All right, I'm good with that. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with Zach Burge here on a Tuesday. Everybody stay tuned.
Inspired, pro designed, tested and proven by legends on the water, dominating the tournament trail for over 50 years. Everything you need, one legendary brand, Strike King.
Hey guys, Major League Fishing Pro Jacob Wheeler here with my new Signature Series line of rods with Duckett Fishing. We have my 7.2 cranking rod right here. Crankbaits can be very fickle, and having the right, you know, having a lot of tip can be too much, and having not enough tip can, you know, lose a lot of fish. So you really got to be careful. If there's one or two techniques that I'm really, really adamant about having the perfect action is a crankbait, especially like a square bill, a DT6. You know, those medium running crankbaits in the springtime when those fish's mouths are pretty tough, that's when I'm really, really, really on top of having my actions just perfect.
Utilizing my experience, utilizing my time on the water, evolving as an angler. And that evolution should never stop. You have to do it every day. From when you wake up in the morning, you got to be thinking about changing, continually changing every minute, every cast. That's really the premise of fishing the moment.
Everyone, Brandon Polnick here. People always be asking me what I got tied on. I'm like, X-Zone lures. And they're like, Brandon, why you got X-Zone lures tied on? And I'm like, let me show you why.
The bite. Hey. Get out of there. Get out of there. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's freaking. Get in here. Oh, God. Giant. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I think you get the point.
The Ned Rig. What rod should I be using with the Ned Rig? My favorite is the Denali Lithium multi-spin rod. It's our 7'4" length, great Ned Rig rod. It's got a great sensitive tip on it. It's long enough where I can make long casts, which you're usually fishing clear water with a Ned Rig, and it's got enough backbone to get those fish in. So check it out, Denali Lithium Series 7'4" multi-spin.
Guys, what makes our Spro lures beat the competition?
I mean, you have to admit, we nailed it with my McSticks and rock crawlers.
Man, we've all won money on my plugs.
My Wimix shop put fish in my boat.
One thing's for sure, we all count on our Spro lures to beat the competition.
Designing cutting-edge baits with some of America's top anglers, Spro lures beat the competition. To see the entire lineup, visit a retailer near you or spro.com.
All right, we are back on a Tuesday. It is time to go to our second guest of the day.
You got your last chance, double or nothing.
No. What was the comment that was said?
Matt just won on a Carolina rig and didn't even throw it.
Wow, that's pretty funny. All right, let's bring in guest number two.
Ask him, I'm curious.
All right, we'll ask him. Hang on a second here. Zach, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
All right, ask away, Matthew.
Last 5 years, you ever primarily cashed a check using a Carolina rig?
No.
Have you ever cashed a check like you? Like, I could see you, like, maybe back in the day, like, 2011, 12, like, maybe dragging a Carolina rig off a point on the Arkansas River or something like that. Never? Have you ever caught a fish in a tournament on a Carolina rig?
Yes.
You have?
I have.
Okay.
Very, very rarely do I even throw one.
When was the last time you had one, like, tied on where you're like, I'm going to catch him on the Carolina rig?
Probably like 3 years ago.
Jeez, man. All right, you're making your point there, Matthew. Hey, Zach, I want to ask this. Did you go to Blanchard High School?
I didn't. I went to Bridge Creek High School.
Okay, I couldn't remember. I knew that you lived in Blanchard, but that was actually the school that I was at prior to going to Blanchard, Matthew.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if he sent it to me. I forgot all about this.
What are you looking up?
No.
Well, while he's doing that, here.
It's real quick because it's right. So Jared Miller, when we were at Milford, because it ties everything together with what we just had.
Okay.
One of the best blue cat fisheries in the country. The guy was Carolina rigging a spook for blue cats. It's
what?
A thing that the guides do there. They have a big weight, just like a Carolina rig, but then picture right before your hook is a spook, a big saltwater spook, because it rattles, and then you put your cut bait on a single back hook off of the spook, and it creates, because it's muddy water there, it creates buoyancy and rattling. So he was Carolina rigging a spook. There's actually a picture of it for blue cats. I meant to tell you that weeks ago when I saw it, because it was like literally up your alley.
Interesting. All right, Zach, great job so far. I don't know how much you can say, but I am intrigued by what went down on first day of qualifying. What can you tell us and the fans about what went down on that first day that you smashed him?
I ended up starting in an area that I thought I was going to go in and catch schooling fish. It wasn't my primary area. The second day of practice, I went in there and fish were busting in the middle of the creek, and I caught a few, and I thought, okay, well, this is somewhere I can come and start maybe if the wind's not blowing, and catch a few and kind of kickstart my day. And the first day of my competition day, the wind wasn't blowing, so I thought, well, let me just whip in there real quick. It's not too far off the main lake. And they weren't schooling. Not much was going on. And I decided to kind of just wait around a little bit and see if maybe they would start. So I went to the bank and just started fishing. I started catching fish. Not necessarily what I intended to do, but it really seems like what I'm doing is just a good pattern, really, regardless where I go on the lake, because I'm getting bit everywhere. That I've been, it's just certain places are putting out better quality fish.
All right, one more question, then I'm going to flip it over to Matt. I did watch an interview with you, and you made the comment that this situation of going directly to the championship round is best case scenario for you. Can you elaborate on that? Why do you feel that way?
Because I hate knockout rounds.
Bottom line,
I hate them. Because in the past, I just have a bad history with getting to the knockout round and then either running out of fish or not being able to figure out how to catch more fish or new fish that day during the knockout round. I think I've gotten pretty good at getting to them and catching fish for 2 days of competition, but getting through knockout round when weight's zero, and if I can't carry my weight that I've already had into it, it becomes pretty tough on me. So if I can skip it by winning my group and going straight to the championship day, that gives my fish or the area that I've been fishing a day to kind of recover. And hopefully tomorrow there'll be, you know, a bunch of new fish ready to bite.
All right, Matt.
I was reading the press release from your opening round wins and stuff and then kind of watching and seeing what was going on. You're kind of doing some Oklahoma stuff to take the lead in this. I mean, I know we got Bradley Hallman in studio tomorrow. He has a special fondness for certain techniques, and it seems like you're kind of maybe using a little bit of 10 killer stuff on Travis.
Yeah, it's a this would be right up 10 killers alley.
It just seemed like it fits you perfect.
Yeah, it is. I was catching a ton of fish in practice. I mean, like 50, 75 plus a day, but they were all little. I'm talking like non-scorables. Maybe 10 of those 15 might have scored, if that. So I was trying to think of a way to catch to make a better quality fish bite. And instead of throwing like Ned rigs and drop shots like I was doing in practice and getting a bunch of bites, I picked up a little small compact jig and started slinging it around. And the quality instantly changed, and I was still getting a good amount of bites too. Maybe not as many, but I'll sacrifice some quality for quantity any day.
All right. I'm curious on this. There are a lot of people out there that are aspiring to be Zach Birch. Seriously. The way that you have done it and the way that you have risen to be one of the top guys now, why do you think that this has happened for you? And what would you say is the biggest contributing factor from a performance standpoint on the water, not off the water, because you got a lot of stuff going on off the water. On the water, what is the one thing that really you believe has brought you to the top?
Fishing my strength, and I can kind of explain that instead of just being, kind of vague. When I started fishing, well, growing up through high school, through college stuff, I always fished the way I wanted to fish. And saying that, I mean, I had to cash a check. I couldn't afford to just go to a tournament and fish to win. I'd be out of money after that event, and I couldn't do the next one. So through college at Oklahoma State, we basically, if we cashed a $10 check, they would reimburse us for the whole event, and then we'd split our winnings with the club. So, basically we get $5 out of it. Or if it was $5,000, we'd still do the same scenario. We'd split the money with the club, and they'd reimburse us for the trip. So through college, I always fished just to cash a check and so I could go to the next one. After graduating school, fishing Rayovacs at the time and BFLs, it's the same way. I fished to cash checks so I could continue to fish and, potentially end up where we are today. My sophomore season on the FLW tour, which everybody talks all the time about, sophomore slump. It's a true thing. But in my scenario, I obviously made a lot of friends my rookie season. So I started talking to a bunch more people and listening to what they had to say or what might be the deal at a certain lake, or you need to do this, you need to do that. And I kind of got away from fishing the way I like to fish and doing what I like to do. And that showed as a performance. I went like 3 tournaments in a row where I didn't cash a check. And I had to sit down and legit look over what I was doing and figure out why I wasn't performing the way I thought I should be. And it was because I got away from fishing what I like to do, fish and the way I like to do it. So since then, I've gone back to what got me here. And, I just go out every day and I fish the way I like to fish. And I fish what's in front of me and what looks good. And it works for me. That's kind of how I've gotten here.
I want to go back to something you probably aren't thrilled to talk about, but you have been on fire since that was. You came in late on day one of Lake Murray. And then you went out the next day and busted almost a 20-pound bag. And now you win your group in the 2 days and pass Jacob Wheeler to make the final round. Did that kind of mistake like light a fire under you because of the success that you've had since then?
I can't explain that feeling when I showed up. I even stopped like 100 yards shy of check-in to make a few extra casts that first day at Lake Murray. And I had like 3 minutes to go. I said, all right, let's run in. I shut down and he asked me what my boat number was. And I said, I think it was 16. He said, it's about time you showed up. And I instantly had a bad gut feeling. I said, what are you talking about? He said, you're supposed to be here 30 minutes ago. I said, well, I thought it was 3:30. He said, no, it was 3. And obviously at that point, there was nothing I could do. Mm-hmm. I was more than 15 minutes behind. basically tossed out my whole bag of fish that day, which was only like 11 or 12 pounds, but it made me angry, extremely frustrated, but it only lasted like 30 minutes, honestly. After that, I mean, there's nothing I could do. I couldn't go back and argue a situation, or it was my fault, plain as day. From the time the tournament took off that morning, I knew I was supposed to be back at 3:30. I was wrong. I was, you know, the only person that could be at fault for it. So best thing I could do was forget about it and start over the next day and do the best that I could. I knew I needed like a 25-pound bag to get back in the tournament.
You almost did it.
Almost.
Like, did you think during that day, like, oh, my God, I'm going to actually do this?
When I caught the 7-Eleven, I thought, all right, well, I got to but came up a little bit short. But, you know, you just can't sit there and drag yourself down over one little mistake. You got to get back in and start fighting again. So far, we're doing good at it.
All right, man. Final question, and then we'll let you go. I know you got a busy day today, even though it's your off day. What do you think is the biggest factor for you to win the Red Trophy?
Getting every bite that I can in the boat, and not getting spun out right off the bat in the morning. You know, if somebody goes out and catches a handful of fish, not to get, you know, in too big a hurry. I know what I'm doing is a good way to win. I mean, I've seen good numbers of fish. I've seen good quality. Yesterday, I didn't see the same quality I did the first day, but it was still a consistent bite all day. So if I can go out in the morning, get a few bites, kind of get settled in and just pick them off all day, and everything go my way, I think we'll have a legit shot at it.
All right, man. What's your execution been like? I'm just curious because you had a great qualifying round.
It's been good. I've missed a few fish, but, you know, I think a lot of them are these small Guadalupes that pick it up and swim with it. And, you know, they feel good when you set the hook, you lose a pinch here or something. But at the same time, like the 4-pounders that I've caught, they kind of bite it the same way. You pick it up, just kind of swim it out, you set the hook, and then, you know, you instantly know there's a lot more weight on the end. So it's just, as long as I, you know, retie plenty of times. This lake is full of zebra mussels, so, you know, retying a whole bunch is key. And then getting them in the boat, obviously. If I do those two things and get plenty of bites, we'll have a shot.
Guadalupes are kind of cool.
They are cool.
Have you had a keeper yet?
I've caught two.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, it is a cool fish. Hey, man, I'm curious, did you get any of the storm damage, hail damage that rolled through here last week?
No, actually we didn't. We were pretty fortunate. Mine lives like 3 miles down the road from me, and their neighbor lost their whole shop. It looked like a tornado blew it down. Yeah. Minor roof damage. It was crazy what just a couple of miles the difference is.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, man. Once again, greatly appreciate you taking time out on your day off to give the fans some insight on what's going on. And best of luck to you, man. Hopefully you get the W.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care. All right. There you have it, folks. Zach Burge. Good dude, man.
I think he's got it dialed in. Like
he's
I said,
pretty, he's pretty dialed
he's a
in.
A lot like 10 killer.
Yeah, I watched a lot of the highlights and the jig that
LBJ.
He was using. Yeah. It was definitely cool. Very, very intrigued with that lake. What are your thoughts on that lake? You've been on that lake, been around it.
Travis?
Yeah.
It's a cool lake. I mean, you can run up the rivers and get in the dirty water. You can stay down. You have a lot of boat traffic that you have to contend with. You have stripers. It's a numbers lake. I asked Brent that question about the live scope because there's a lot of guys that it was kind of more summertime when the Elite Series was there, but they were live scoping. And that was before active target or anything, but live scoping them off the cables around the docks. You had a lot of wacky rigs. You can go big bait. You can go small bait. There's a lot of different elements on that. Like, it's not an easy lake to fish. It's definitely a recreational lake. But it's a really cool lake. It reminds me a lot of it does remind me a lot of Ten Killer.
Yeah.
A lot of Ten Killer and Table Rock mixed in with a little bit of Amistad, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's got a little West Coasty vibe. I don't know if that's down there kind of by Austin where everything's just a little different. But if I was to combine it, it'd be Ten Killer, Table Rock, and Amistad or Havasu.
Any comparison to Lake Mead? You've been on both.
Lake Mead's so much more open with there's not with so much of those more like cliffs and stuff like that. There's a lot of contours on this lake.
Yeah. I know in some of the highlights over on MajorLeagueFishing.com, a lot of do nothing banks and a lot of guys talking about that. And then when you look at who qualified for the next round, you reeled off some of the names earlier. To me, that was a little bit surprising.
Yeah, I mean, the guys in the top right now, well, Jacob Wheeler, doesn't matter where that is, but, you know, Russ Lane, Casey Ashley, Chris Lane, MDJ, David Dudley, John Cox, Alton Jr. Well, those are the guys that are in the top eight at the film of this. But, yeah, I mean, there were a bunch of power fishermen that made it. Tommy Biffle, Poche, Spore, Klein, Wiggins, Alton, Ish, Fletcher, Fred, Stephen Browning, Bobby Lane, Michael Neal.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you could also, I mean, you've also got like the Brent Ehlers and stuff in there too. But as a whole, a lot of the power fishermen excelled on Lake Travis this week for the BPT.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, tomorrow, Bradley Hallman. I'm not sure if he's going to be in studio or from his house.
Maybe,
I think we have
that
dialed in. Yet.
Yeah. He's got it dialed in from the house.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. So either way, Bradley Hallman will be on the show talking about his success that he had during the Opens. And then also we'll talk a little bit about the James River going into the next Open. Both Matt and Brad leave later this week for the East Coast. What is it? 18 hours?
17, 18 hours. The Douglas video. I'm going to put it out today.
Okay.
It's going to be out today. Day one. I'm going to split it into multiple days because there were some occurrences on day one. We kind of went through that on the show yesterday, but I'm putting it all in there, Mark.
Very nice. All right. The other thing we're going to do tomorrow, I'm going to announce the two people that are going to help me next week when you're gone to guest host the show.
Okay.
So we're going to make that announcement tomorrow. Got a couple of emails from people. Hey, when are you going to make the announcement? Well, I'm going to make it tomorrow. And then those people will be involved in the shows that we're going to do next week. And then this week, day four, Frank on Thursday. Not sure what he's going to talk about. Dude, he sent me some very, very cool pictures of smallmouth.
Really? I talked to him last night, too.
Yeah.
I sent him a picture. I had one of my buddies who works in the marine industry had a customer who was like, hey, man, you ever seen this with a prop before?
Yeah.
And the prop... I'll just show you the picture real quick because this is kind of cool. And we haven't hit the closing. We haven't hit the close yet.
No, hopefully I can make it through the close. I didn't.
You fumbled didn't do that it. One. Oh, man. Yesterday.
I was coughing, allergies.
All right.
A mess
look,
yesterday.
Look at the ear on that prop.
What's up with that?
It's like a rainbow color. And then look at the shaft on it.
What's up with that?
So he said, hey, have you ever seen it? And it looks like, how would you describe it? It looks like, you remember those old quantum reels that had like the chameleon pattern on it?
I still
it's
have
like
a couple
silver
of them.
And then, but it's like purple and obviously it's something heat related because that's the only way a prop could do that. And he said, you ever seen anything like this? No one has. So I said, oh, no, but I know a guy who knows a guy. So
he
Frank
does,
was all about it. And then he sent it to his prop guy. And let me see. What did he end up saying it was? Oh, he ended up calling me. So then he was fired up about it. So basically what is happening is in the motor is not burning all of the fuel. So then the fuel is going out of the vents in the prop. It's basically a flamethrower coming out of the back of the boat because all the fuel isn't getting burned.
That's not a good thing, is it?
No. The lower unit is getting hot because it's not burning the fuel clean in the motor. I'm reading... this is super special here. So the fuel is leaching from the exhaust system, and when it gets it's igniting under the water. So it's basically a flamethrower out the back of the
lower unit. You getting that looked at?
Yeah. It blows out the portholes in the prop, and then he said you can see the burn lines in the holes of the prop where it's blowing out. And Frank was like, he was like, you know how he talks, he's like, dude, we need to run that thing at night. That would be so badass. He's like, it would be so badass at night. It would be like flames underwater. But anyway, for it to work, there's got to be like a specific prop net that doesn't melt and all sorts of stuff. But like three things had to happen, and the guy's basically got a flamethrower underneath the water. But that's what's causing his prop to turn like a chameleon.
So did you
color.
Get that checked out?
It's not me. I don't know. I have any idea who it's with.
Did you take it to a certified professional to get that checked out?
I have no idea what's going on. I just think it's
so you're just rolling with it.
No, it's not me. I have nothing to do with it. My buddy, it's my buddy's who knew someone who had it, and he's like, hey, you ever seen a prop that's done this before? We're trying to figure it out. You're like, and I was like, no. I said,
it's not your boat.
No, it's not even someone's boat that I know.
Okay.
It's like 2 or 3 years old.
Okay. That's pretty good, though, man. Going the
extra
mile.
Had you ever seen that?
No, I hadn't.
It's cool looking, isn't it?
Yeah, you're,
it's like
a
chameleon
comparison.
Color on the. It looks exactly like the old quantum reels.
Yeah.
They weighed about a pound and a half. Remember those things?
They're pretty heavy. The blue ones were heavy, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still have a few of those laying around on the mezzanine upstairs.
You got a lot of stuff up there.
There's a lot of stuff up there. Boy, when I finally make the call to just quit and give everything up, there's going to be one heck of a garage sale here. Probably not going to happen for a while, but
no,
yeah,
because
there's some vintage stuff here.
A lot of time left there. As long as you stay on 2 feet.
As long as I don't fall and hit my head. All right, good stuff. I want to thank Joe Pogger for making those interviews happen. Joe does a great job for Major League Fishing and Charity also. She did the test this morning. Some people were saying, oh, it's awful dark and everything. Folks, they're scrambling to get an area for us to do that interview, and it was it's one of those deals. You know how your laptop camera or the camera that you have, sometimes it's continually trying to update what the lighting is and all that and everything. So it was as good as they could do. They were actually in the HQ hotel. I think they were in some conference room or something like that. But bottom line is this. For them to put forth the effort to be able to have those guys on and talk about the stuff that they went through, some of the stuff that they went through on capturing the win and automatically going into the championship round. We want to thank them for doing that.
I didn't realize Chick-fil-A was open for breakfast.
Oh, geez. You want breakfast instead?
No, I think I'll
get. Is that what you want?
I think I'll get the early lunch. It's currently open right now.
Because you're going to be here for a while. You're going to be in the studio for a while.
Editing,
right?
Yeah.
All right. I got your lunch today. Jeez. I seriously am a little surprised.
I'm not.
It's forgotten, man.
You'd have lost it on Zach Burge, too. I'd have been eating for free for the whole week, and I knew it.
He's one of the young dudes.
Oh, yeah.
There.
I think I might have to. Well, is the honey butter chicken biscuit? That's a Whataburger thing.
I have no idea. Couldn't tell you.
That is the most that I've won on a Carolina rig in my life.
Wow. All right, folks. So thanks for taking part, being a part of the show today. Greatly appreciate it. Make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube. And then if you're listening to the podcast, please leave us a review and give us a rating. It helps us out immensely. All right. Good job, dude. Tomorrow, Bradley Hallman. Frank on Thursday. That's it, folks. We're out of here.